The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the better worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week, we're interviewing best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday people just like you that we call Better Worldians, people whose small acts make a big difference. We are the family team that created the popular virtual world on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. Now let me take this opportunity to introduce you to my co-host, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. Now here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, it's really great to be here today to share all the good being done in the world. Let me also introduce Gregory Hansel. Gregory has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, this is Gregory. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today at Better Worldians Radio. Let me just tell you a bit about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded and with Mary Sue took public a national marketing firm. Giving back has always been really important to Dad, who supports cancer research, disabled children, and disadvantaged families, among other causes. I want to share some really big news with everyone today at Better Worldians Radio. We've recently launched a worldwide kindness campaign. We're challenging Better Worldians all around the globe to watch a short, sweet, two-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When it reaches a million views, we'll release funds for surgeries that will allow 10 disabled kids in the developing world to walk for the first time. You can watch that video and share it with your friends at colorwithkindness.com.
Thanks, Greg. This week on Better Worldians Radio, we are talking about habits of happiness. We'll discuss the surprising way that you can become a happier you. Joining us is happiness expert Dr. Matthew Delaporta. He'll discuss how developing good habits like practicing gratitude and giving back helps cultivate happiness. Dr. Delaporta is a PhD graduate from the University of California. Using his expertise in health and wellness, Dr. Delaporta assists business professionals in cultivating optimal employee performance, engagement, and organizational health while helping the bottom line. He has also given evidence-based recommendations to a variety of organizations wishing to emphasize employee wellness in their corporate culture.
Matt, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Good. Well, Matt, let's begin with a question that our listeners are probably asking themselves right now. What is a happiness expert?
Well, that term will pretty much come from two basic things. First of all, as a normal person wanting to be happy, I've always been interested in this topic. I've always explored various avenues to achieve greater happiness, but the other component of it is that through my graduate and doctorate training, I studied how to become happy through a scientific perspective, through rigorous experimental methods and basically different kinds of ways to investigate happiness-boosting activities and to what degree they're actually effective.
Great. You know, happiness seems like it's a really hot topic these days. People are talking about it a lot. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, you know, happiness to some extent has always been a popular topic, but especially nowadays, I think people are becoming more empowered and becoming more aware of the importance of happiness as opposed to, you know, simple, you know, professional success and things like that. So, you know, I think we're ushering in an age where people are really concerned about self-improvement and living the best possible lives that they can.
Very interesting. How does that relate to positive psychology, and what's the difference between positive psychology and regular psychology?
Well, positive psychology is a relatively recent research movement that started in psychology in the 90s. And basically, positive psychology is the study of what is right with humanity as opposed to what is wrong with it. Traditionally, psychology, you know, if you think of, you know, pivotal characters like Freud, for example, looked at psychology from the perspective of, you know, there's something wrong with people. Let's try to piece apart what exactly causes people to have fears and, you know, doubts and phobias and things like that. Positive psychology, as I mentioned, is a more recent movement that takes a completely different view by investigating things such as happiness and looking at what is right with humanity, what are the more positive aspects of, you know, psychological well-being and things of that sort. So positive psychology, to answer your question, is essentially the study of things like happiness, gratitude, hope, curiosity, more of the kind of positive components of psychology.
Great, Matt. Interesting. Why did you make happiness and positivity your life's work?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, just like any normal person, I was interested in happiness, and I was also studying psychology as an undergraduate. And when I decided I wanted to go into graduate school and get my PhD, I started looking at different kinds of ways I could do that, and I stumbled across one researcher in particular, Sonia Lubomirsky, who was studying happiness, and that occurred to me to be a really interesting topic and something that I thought would not be just interesting for scientific reasons, but also for personal reasons as well.
I have a big question for you, Matt. Are some people just born happy or unhappy, or what actually determines a person's level of happiness?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. The working model that my research lab, you know, headed by Sonia, was working with was basically that the differences in happiness between one person and everyone else depends on three things. The first of them is genetics, so the way that we're born, and this accounts for about 50% of those differences. The next thing is life circumstances. So this is what kind of job you have, how do you look physically, where do you live, things of that sort. That accounts for 10% of those differences. And then finally, intentional activity. So the things that we choose to do day to day to make us more or possibly less happy accounts for 40% of those differences. So genetics do play a role in people's happiness, but it is not the end-all and be-all. There's still a fair amount of, quote-unquote, wiggle room.
I bet a lot of people will be surprised about that. So what you're saying here, that this isn't just a theory, this is actually based on research. Can you tell us a bit about that research?
Sure. So there is quite a bit of evidence suggesting that, you know, these numbers are accurate in terms of to what degree they account for differences in happiness. So, you know, research with genetics has looked at the differences in identical versus fraternal twins, and that's where we get that sort of number of about 50%. Life circumstances is an interesting one. You know, there's been studies done on things like lottery winners, for example, or people, or kind of on the other end of the spectrum, people who suffer some kind of paralyzing injury. And what the research shows is that those kinds of things, these major life events that happen externally, don't necessarily have that big of an impact on people's happiness long term. To be sure, there's a big short term difference, but long term, there's not as much as you would expect. And the research that our lab focuses on primarily is that latter category of intentional activities. So what are the, you know, happiness-boosting activities a person can do on a day-to-day basis that can basically allow the person to choose to become happy through what they decide to do?
Really interesting. What has been one of the biggest surprises in the research that either you've done personally or with Sonia that you found?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, you know, really just the basic idea that people can choose to become happy and that there's this 40% of differences in happiness that is under our direct control. You know, if you had asked me before I started this this scientific study of happiness, I would have told you that genetics played a much larger role, you know, to use those numbers, more of like around 80 or 90% maybe. But the fact that such a big chunk of our happiness can be attributed to what we choose to do, to me, has been one of the most surprising things. You know, in addition to that, the idea that life circumstances only account for about 10% of our individual differences in happiness, to me, is very interesting, because if you think about the way that we live our lives day to day, we tend to put far more stock in that life circumstances camp. As I mentioned, you know, people think, oh, if I just had a better job, I would be happier, or if I just was a little bit better looking, then I would be happier. If I didn't live in a place that was so cold and I lived on the beach in California, then I would be happier. The research suggests that these things are not true at all, that we tend to adapt to them and that they don't have a long-term impact the way that we might think they would.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Hi, Matt. I just wanted to sort of piggyback on that. I had somebody who always used to say, I'll be happy when.
Right.
And then fill in the blank. I'll be happy when I get to the Caribbean. I'll be happy when I get promoted. I'll be happy when I graduate. And they never seem to be happy at that moment. So can you comment on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, first of all, that that's a very common and to some extent even logical way to approach happiness, where you just assume that there's always something better. And in reality, there always is going to be something better. Even if you're one of the richest people in the world, or you live in one of the best places in the world, you'll never totally be satisfied. You'll always think of a way that things could be even better than they are. So, you know, to your point, I agree that if you have that kind of mentality, chances are you're never going to be happy where you are here and now. You're always going to be looking more toward the future and what you can do possibly at that point. So, you know, I guess the takeaway point would be that, you know, you have to kind of accept and even embrace your current life circumstances and focus more on what is under your direct control as opposed to things that you wish are different.
Oh, that's really great. That's really great input. We're going to take a break right now. For our listeners, we're talking to happiness expert Dr. Matthew Della Porta. And when we come back, we'll be talking more about positive psychology and how you can apply it to your own life. You can learn more at BetterWorldians.com and follow our live tweets at Twitter.com/BetterWorldians. We'll be right back now.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds, make a difference, and have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Back live with happiness expert Dr. Matthew Della Porta. You can learn more at betterworldians.com and follow our live tweets at twitter.com/betterworldians.
Hi, Matt. This is Greg. How are you doing?
Hello.
You know, my first question, and I think it's something that everyone at home is probably wondering, can anybody be happy?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it? You know, there, as I mentioned, genetics do play a substantial role in happiness, but not a dominant one. So, you know, for certain people, if you have a history of something, you know, like major depressive disorder throughout your family or bipolar disorder or, you know, any degree of mood disorders happening there, you're more prone to that sort of disorder. And, of course, those things are going to affect your happiness. But I do want to make clear that in virtually all cases, there is that certain degree of wiggle room, that 40%, that is, you know, no small beans. That's a substantial amount of happiness that is under someone's direct control. And, you know, on top of that, if someone is suffering from something like major depression, you know, part of that intentional activity is being proactive and constructive in essentially fighting back against the symptoms of that disorder.
Right, right. Well, I guess the other big question is, what are some of the things people can do to become happier?
Well, that's kind of what my lab specializes in. We, through long-term experimental studies using random assignments and control groups, we test different kinds of activities and determine to what extent they are effective in the long term. And some of the activities that we've had the most success in testing are things like expressing gratitude. So specifically, that would be something like writing a letter of gratitude to someone or keeping a gratitude journal. Acts of kindness is another big one, where if you do 5 acts of kindness all in one day, that's been shown to improve happiness substantially over the long term. Optimism is another big one. If you take a moment to kind of write about how you see your best possible self in the future regarding, you know, various areas of your life, like your romantic life or your professional life, that's another way that it can happen.
What is a gratitude journal?
Well, a gratitude journal would basically just be, you know, waking up in the morning or whenever a time is good to write down the things that you're grateful for and really trying to think about, you know, how things could be worse and what are the things I take for granted and what are the things that, you know, other people in maybe less developed countries don't have, like, you know, things like clean water and a hot shower and things like that. A gratitude journal is essentially just a way to keep a diary of the things that you're grateful for and helps you kind of remind yourself on a daily or weekly basis things you should be keeping in mind when things get hard.
That's interesting. You know, one thing I was wondering is there sort of a big kahuna, you know, one act that, you know, is the thing that, if nothing else, people should do this to help themselves feel happier?
Well, I think it varies quite a bit from person to person. That's actually one of the things we've looked at to some degree in our lab is this idea that we call FIT, and that is the extent to which a given happiness-boosting activity is good for someone to do, that it feels right, that it feels natural, that it's interesting to them, you know, things like that. So I wouldn't say that there's necessarily any one particular activity that's the best. It really just has more to do with what your individual preferences are.
That's interesting. So is fit just very, very individual, or is that something where certain kinds of people, you know, tend to like certain kinds of, you know, do good actions or happiness causing things?
I think it's both, that to some degree it's individual person to person, but that you could also probably come up, you know, probably based on personality traits, certain kinds of activities that are a better fit for other people versus people with different personalities.
Do you personally have a favorite act? Can I ask you that?
Well, that's sure. you know, I think for me, I would say my answer would be gratitude, because it's something that, you know, truthfully, I haven't really developed as well as I could throughout my life. And when I started studying gratitude and I saw just time after time how effective it was, it's really something that I found to be personally very meaningful, and something that, as I mentioned, you know, when times get hard, it's so easy to kind of lose perspective and think of, you know, how hard your life is and what a, you know, a terrible time you're going through. But if you take a moment to really just keep, you know, what really amounts to an objective perspective of, like, what are the things that you have that a lot of people in this world don't have, like, you know, basic necessities and, you know, a decent life. That can make a huge, huge difference, and that's what it's done for me.
Wow. Well, how about hope? You know, is that something that can lead people to greater happiness?
Absolutely, yeah. Hope is very much related to optimism and that kind of idea of thinking about what is your best possible life going to be like, and what are the kinds of things you're striving for. And, you know, hope is important because it's one thing to have that ideal of, you know, this is the kind of, you know, a romantic life I want with, you know, a wife and kids and the picket fence and all that sort of thing. But it's another thing to truly believe and have hope that that sort of thing is going to happen, as opposed to, you know, this is what I would like, but, you know, chances are it's not going to happen. Hope is the assurance and something just to latch onto when times get hard, that, you know, there's a reason I'm waking up in the morning. There's a reason I'm going from day to day to day, and that there is something to look forward to, and there is something good that's going to happen eventually that will help a lot.
Mm. Well, how do you balance then hope with, you know, as you were mentioning earlier, you know, a lot of people think that happiness depends on circumstance. So, you know, if they lose 10 pounds or win the lottery or buy a bigger house, I mean, how do you balance hope toward happiness but not try to have those kind of expectations that might maybe weigh you down?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. My answer to that would be basically that, you know, it's good to cultivate hope and to have an expectation that things will happen, but also not necessarily to put all your eggs in that basket and not to kind of center your life around ensuring that those things happen. Hope would be more of kind of the idea that you trust that things will work out okay, that you don't necessarily have to, you know, go through everything and put forth a ton of effort and work to make these things happen, that if, you know, if you do what you're supposed to be doing and you live your life in a good way, that things tend to work out okay.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, I believe in myself and I believe that I'll get there, but I'm not obsessing with this. I'm not waiting for it to happen until I can be happy.
Right, yeah, and as I mentioned, you know, you're not putting all of your eggs in that basket and telling yourself, you know, the only way I can be happy is through that particular thing.
Well, then related to that, you know, let me ask you, what's kind of really bad for happiness? You know, what do you want to avoid? Are there any real happiness killers? What do you watch out for?
You know, my answer might surprise a lot of people. I think the biggest thing that can affect your happiness negatively is focusing on being happier. And what I mean by that is...
It's been a great show then, Matt. No.
You know, what I mean by that is, you know, we brought up at the top of the show how, you know, happiness has become a very popular topic and that a lot of people are interested in it, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. I think where the danger lies is people start to become very self-obsessed, and they start to think of their happiness as the end-all and be-all and the thing that needs number one attention. So what I would say is that really the best thing people can do to be happy is to not worry so much about themselves, but rather to worry about other people and just kind of trust that happiness will come from that. You know, if you're focusing too much on to what extent you are happy and how you could be happier and all that sort of thing, you know, chances are you're never really going to feel as happy as you would like. It's better to kind of allow happiness to happen as a result of good habits as opposed to something you're kind of obsessively seeking and focusing on for your own personal benefit.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue to my next question, which was how important really are habits then to becoming happy? My sense was that these aren't, you know, once and done. Is this something you have to really get, you know, become second nature in your life?
Habits are, I would say, the essence of being happy. You know, our everyday lives, our everyday circumstances are no guarantee that we are going to be happy by default if we kind of just go about our daily business not really worrying about it. You know, cultivating good habits, as I mentioned, things like doing nice things for other people, feeling grateful, having an attitude of hope and optimism, these are daily habits that really need to happen. Like, I would say a good example would be, you know, a lot of people are familiar with daily affirmations. So you wake up in the morning and you tell yourself, you know, I'm a good person, good things are coming my way, you know, I have a lot to be grateful for. You tell yourself these things because if you don't, chances are negativity is going to creep up either from within you or around you. And, you know, you really have to kind of think of happiness as something that can be attained through daily habits and almost as if it's kind of a warding off of negativity. I mean, if we're going to be real here, you know, the world is a mixed bag, let's say. You know, there's a lot of good things, but there's also a lot of really bad things. There's a lot of negativity out there. And if you're not careful, if you're kind of just minding your own business and not really concerned, that negativity can really end up bringing you down. So it's good kind of almost as a defensive posture to have habits that cultivate happiness.
Mm. Well, do you have any tricks for sort of catching yourself? You know, things, habits that people can use to sort of prevent them? Or, oops, I just noticed I'm negative again. You know, anything like that?
Sure. I think an awareness of the way that we think is absolutely critical. You know, a lot of people might know this idea as what we call mindfulness. You know, the purposeful awareness of the present moment. And a big part of the present moment is basically what's going on in your head. How are you thinking right now? And if you take some time to really work on that, it's really just staggering what kind of thoughts can go through our head kind of unchecked and unaddressed. You know, it's very easy, especially if, you know, if you have fairly difficult life circumstances, you start to really cultivate, you know, habitual negative thinking, you know, feelings of resentment, arguing with people in your head, things like that. So to whatever extent people can be aware of the way that they're thinking, and as you mentioned, you know, hey, oh, look at that, I'm thinking negatively again, not to get down on yourself about it, but simply just to be aware of that, and to, of course, from there make efforts to change the way that you think. I think that's absolutely critical. Everything really kind of trickles down from the way that we think.
You know, that's fascinating. I mean, I've noticed just like with happiness that mindfulness has been really in the news a lot recently. You know, why do you think that is? Do you think it's just that that's so key for kind of becoming happy?
Yeah, I would say even before I took an interest in this kind of general topic of happiness, mindfulness was something that I really had a lot of interest in and was interested in studying because mindfulness, I do agree, is central because if you think about it, like what moment do you have in your life but the present moment? You know, any moment that has happened in the past was a present moment at that time. Any moment that's going to happen in the future is also a present moment at that time. So the whole idea of mindfulness is really just to kind of stop, be attentive, on purpose, non-judgmentally looking at what's happening in the moment. And, you know, if you have a daily habit of doing that, that's huge because you're dealing with life as it's occurring as opposed to being hung up on things that have already happened that are out of your control or hoping that certain things happen that might be out of your control. you're dealing with life as it comes in the present moment. And, you know, really, rationally speaking, that's probably the best way to approach it.
You know, I know that, you know, we actually have a show coming up in a week on meditation, and I've read that meditation and mindfulness have a relationship. Could you say something about that and what else people can do to kind of develop habits of mindfulness?
Absolutely. I mean, the kind of core of mindfulness is developed through meditation practice. And, you know, as soon as you bring up that word meditation, a lot of people have these kind of silly ideas of, you know, going om or, you know, any of that kind of new age stuff. But really, all that mindfulness meditation is what, you know, what I've always called it is mental exercise. You know, we all agree that physical exercise is important, that we're, you know, supposed to, you know, get some cardio in, some strength training in, whatever it is. But how do you work out your mind? How do you mentally exercise? And I would say that mindfulness meditation is absolutely one of the best ways to do that. By paying attention to your breath, that would probably be the most kind of basic form of mindfulness meditation. By paying attention to the way you're breathing in and the way that you're breathing out, your breath is not only the thing that keeps you alive moment to moment, but anchors you constantly to the present moment. You know, you're not going to worry about a breath you took 5 minutes ago. It's the breath that you're taking right now. So by simply sitting quietly, paying attention to your breath as it comes in, paying attention to your breath as it goes out, not trying to force it or control it or anything, but simply just being and sitting and being attentive to your breath, that's a great way to start. And even if you can do that for just 5 minutes a day, maybe even while you're sitting in traffic or something, that can make a huge difference.
Wow. Wow. Well, I think people at home will definitely give that a shot, and everyone's welcome to actually write on to betterworldians.com or on Twitter and let us know what kind of success you're having with that. You know, Matt, since we're talking about habits, we know a lot of people don't know that you reviewed our game, A Better World, where players can do these kind of things like practice gratitude and positive thinking and doing good deeds, small acts of kindness. I think you mentioned something like, I believe that the greatest joy we can experience is through selflessly helping others, and this game provides a fun and easy way to experience that joy. Could you just say something about how A Better World did help you cultivate some of the habits you talked about today?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we all know, gaming is becoming increasingly popular in our culture, and to me, it was so refreshing to see a gaming platform that had a direct connection to the real world, and specifically a connection in which you could be helping people and cultivating good habits like we've just been talking about. So for me, as I mentioned in the review, really one of the most striking things was the idea that, you know, I could write a get-well note to real needy children in impoverished countries. And to know that that note could go through to them and that that was contributing to a greater good of, you know, getting needy children surgeries and things of that nature, to me was just great. I really thought that that was a fantastic way to, as I mentioned, first of all, help people cultivate good habits. But, you know, on the flip side, as I was talking about before, not to focus entirely on yourself, but to see that, you know, becoming happier doesn't have to be an entirely one-way street. It can be helping other people and being more self-aware of the needs of other people as well.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, our very first show is talking about Cure International, who we work with to do those Get Well notes and how we got those to those kids throughout the world. So thanks for bringing that up. That's one of our favorite sort of killer apps inside the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. One of the things that excited me, you know, generally, as this idea, and this is one of the things that brought me to games, is that, you know, games are habit forming, and everyone thinks about games as, you know, 12-year-old kids playing Space Invaders and bad habits and not getting outside. But to me, the idea that you can use games for good, you know, letting people cultivate happiness and gratitude and other habits, I thought that was really exciting. I just wanted to ask you, how do you feel generally about this idea that games can be used to kind of cultivate habits and help people achieve wellness?
Oh, I totally believe in that idea, and I think you guys are already doing that. You know, I'm a lifelong gamer. I'm one of those kids who was sitting in front of his TV playing Super Mario Brothers when he was six, and I've been gaming ever since to some degree. I've had to stop recently, but I think something like what you're talking about, a virtual platform on which, you know, people can communicate with one another, they can express, you know, prayers and hopes and get those things validated from other people. You can do good acts for other people. You can express gratitude. All that kind of stuff is one thing if you're kind of just doing it on your own and it doesn't necessarily involve people that much. But to be able to do that in a community, I think is really beneficial, and certainly through a gaming platform, that's probably one of the best ways to make that happen.
What do you think is the frontier for kind of gaming for good habits? You know, what would you like to see in a game for good habits?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think really just to whatever extent interactions between people can become more and more, close-knitted and intimate and meaningful, I think that's, you know, the best direction to go. And obviously there's some obstacles in there. You know, people kind of have a habit of being jerks online anonymously, but, you know, if you can figure out a way to kind of have a community of people that are all on the same page, that want to do good, and, you know, they're through kind of, I guess, the programming or whatever you want to call it, you're allowing people to have, you know, close and meaningful experiences with one another, that's, I think, the kind of the future there, to really, you know, almost simulate what it would be like to have that community of people, you know, living in your neighborhood or living, you know, next door to you.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that for you, Matt.
All right, that sounds good.
Hi, Matt. This is Ray again. I just wanted to mention, to piggyback something you said earlier, Charlie Rose had an interview the other night with Reggie Jackson, the former New York Yankee, and he regaled all of his experiences, talked about batting, how to hold the bat. At the end of the interview, Charlie Rose posed a question: what kind of habits do you do on a regular basis? And I guess I was expecting something about stretching or something physically. And he says, you know, I express gratitude. Sometimes I don't get to the end of the day, and I'm still expressing gratitude, whether it's for a sandwich or for a sunset or whatever. And I think it took Charlie Rose a little bit back because they couldn't expect that kind of an answer. So it certainly is something that is out there in a big way. We need to take another break. When we come back, you'll have the chance to ask happiness expert Dr. Del important questions of your own. You can do that several ways. First, you can call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or you can also send us an email at radio@betterworldians.com. And you can tweet us a question at twitter.com/betterworldians. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from there on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Ask the experts. Call toll free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Hi, we're back with happiness expert Dr. Matthew Della Porta. We'd love it if you'd call in with a question. You can do so by calling 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or if you prefer, you can also email us at radio@betterworldians.com and tweet us a question at twitter.com/betterworldians. Hi, Matt. Can you tell us a little bit about how you're applying these very same happiness habits to the workplace wellness?
Yeah, absolutely. As I was finishing up graduate school doing my doctorate in social and personality psychology, I had the idea that I wanted to try to expand my horizons a little bit outside of academia now that I had this research experience. And something that occurred to me right off of the bat is I talked to so many people over the years who, you know, were asking about happiness, but what came up again and again is the simple idea that the workplace was this kind of black hole of happiness, that when people were going to work, they felt like they were being treated like commodities, like they were cogs in the wheel, that frankly their employers just did not care about them at all, and that they were just a means to an end. And I felt that, you know, some of the stuff that I was doing with this happiness research could readily be applied to the workplace. And specifically, what's so exciting about this area is there's quite a bit of evidence suggesting that when employers and organizations invest in employee happiness, it helps their bottom lines. You have more engaged employees. You have employees who are excited to be there and who are going to perform optimally, as opposed to kind of just showing up for work, going through the motions, and doing whatever it minimally takes to get paid. So, you know, my line of work nowadays is more geared toward speaking for different organizations, educating them about the benefits of workplace happiness, what are the different kinds of ways that you can do this for your employees. And most importantly, not that this is just something that is kind of a luxury, but that this is smart business strategy, that this helps save money, this helps lower insurance costs, and that this is what progressive and the best organizations are doing now.
That's very interesting. So you're doing some public speaking engagements as well?
Yes. I've done several talks in the past, you know, at many different conferences, but also for Butler Till Media in Rochester, New York, and I went overseas to Denmark to speak for a think tank company called the Innovation Lab, and you know, it's just been very encouraging to see that a lot of organizations are interested in this. They want to change their workplaces, they want to change their corporate cultures, and that they really just need a little bit of guidance and some stimulation to help get those things in motion.
And what's the reaction been to the, in terms of audience participation and the engagement? What feedback have you gotten so far?
I'll tell you, it's just been absolutely great. I mean, people are really on board with this kind of stuff. And, you know, we were talking about hope earlier. The essence of hope that I feel when I speak to an audience that's really on board with this kind of stuff is just staggering, because people so desperately want a workplace that is a pleasant place to be and a place that they know they're being cared for and in turn they're performing as well as they possibly can. So when people start to hear about not just, you know, here are some interesting ways that you can promote employee well-being, but also the idea that this is smart business practice and that this really makes a difference to the bottom line, I mean, who wouldn't be on board with that? It helps everyone involved.
By the way, how can listeners out there contact you if they're interested in learning more about your consulting services or your public speaking events?
You could just go to my website, which is MatthewDellaPorta.com, and that's spelled MatthewDellaPorta.
Okay, thank you very much. Matt, we're heading into the holiday season, and as you know, that brings a lot of emotions, happiness, excitement, but also some stress, some pressure. So what can our listeners do to feel happier this holiday season?
Well, the holiday season, as you just mentioned, is notoriously kind of a mixed bag. Of course, people have a lot of positive associations. I know over at my house we're already playing Christmas music now that it's just a few days after Halloween. And I think what happens for a lot of people is they get caught up in habitual practices that make the holiday season maybe more stressful than it needs to be. There starts to be less of a focus on, like, what is the purpose of celebrating this holiday? What is vitally important to the enjoyment of people coming together? And, you know, for example, you know, your typical housewife might be thinking, you know, I need to get so much done. I have in-laws coming in. I got to clean the house. I have to make 15 different pies, and if I don't make all those pies, everyone's going to be talking about how, you know, there's not enough pie, all these different kinds of things. And really, you know, what really should be focused on is just quality time with your loved ones. And, you know, if you do have a religious reason for celebrating that holiday, that really comes to the forefront, that you really think about what is your spiritual reason for celebrating this holiday, and not letting anything interfere with that, because that's what is most important for people who believe that. So, you know, my answer to your question would just be is basically simplify. Do what it takes to just make time for your loved ones, and don't get bogged down in the commercialism. Don't get bogged down by unnecessary chores. And, you know, if necessary, just take a stand. You know, if you feel pressured, you know, you don't have to feel that kind of pressure year after year after year. Maybe it's time to just kind of make a decision that here's the way that things need to happen. And I think maybe people, you know, involved in that situation will understand, like, yeah, things are better this way. We don't need to worry about, you know, all the different kinds of things that we normally worry about.
Well, you just went about answering one of my big questions is, do we have enough pie? All kidding aside, I think at this point we're going to push the pie back a little bit. No offense to any of our listeners out there who are in the baking world. But we do have a serious question from Samantha, and along the lines, actually, another question from Caitlin that's talking about how these happiness habits can apply with people who are struggling with depression or really sort of the more disenfranchised or mentally challenged people in the world. How do you find happiness while going through these kind of very hard times?
Well, that's absolutely an important issue to address. You know, in my experience as a columnist for YouBeauty.com, writing about happiness, the feedback I've gotten over and over again is keep writing articles that address these negative issues, because people are really, a lot of people are having a rough time and facing very adverse life circumstances, or as you mentioned, they're really struggling with things like depression. You know, occurrences of depression are very, very high, more than most people think. So, you know, we touched on this earlier, but basically what I would say is just that, you know, you need, for people struggling with depression, it's going to be something that either is going to control you and define you, or it's going to be something that you take a stance against, that you defy, that you say, you know what, I accept the fact that I'm feeling depressed or that this is going to be a recurring struggle for me, but I'm not willing to let that control my life. So, you know, what that specifically will mean is, you know, of course, you know, therapists can be very helpful, and therapists are going to assign depressed people work to do, like, as I mentioned, daily affirmations, or expressing gratitude, or trying to focus on other people, or, you know, mindfulness is another effective technique where you really need to be aware of the negative thoughts going through your head and figure out ways to counteract them. You know, whatever it takes, the attitude of a depressed person who wants to be happy has to be that there is something that can be done. You have to believe in that 40% of the difference that is under your control. And, you know, accept the fact that maybe you're not going to be able to, you know, be a blissful every single day for the rest of your life, but that you're not doomed to feel depressed every day either.
Yeah, I'm reminded by that scene at the back of the movie, The Verdict, that Paul Newman was famously in. In his summation to the jury, he begins this conversation by saying, you know, we think of ourselves as victims, and we become victims. And, you know, it goes on to sort of, you know, elevate the argument and eventually win the jurors over. But essentially, I think that thinking really does take you right there.
Absolutely.
I have another follow-up question here, which is, how does one know if one is happy or just satisfied? Is there kind of a happiness meter that we can measure happiness versus satisfaction?
You know, that's an important idea there. Basically, you know, we can think of happiness as kind of an overarching topic. And what we would say in the research on happiness is that there is, of course, positive emotions associated with happiness, and that there are, within those positive emotions, some of those emotions we would call a high arousal. So that would be things like joy, exhilaration, ecstasy, like all these, like, you know, what people typically think of as happiness, we in the research think of as high arousal positive emotions, these things that really kind of overwhelm us in a good way. But on the other hand, what's really important to remember is that there's also low arousal positive emotions, and these are things like contentment, satisfaction, feelings of peace and tranquility. And in my opinion, the attainment and recurrence of low arousal positive emotions is a better strategy for overall happiness than it is chasing the high arousal emotions like exhilaration and bliss and things like that. The very nature of these high arousal positive emotions is that they're relatively fleeting. They don't stick around forever. They're great when they happen, and they should happen. But if your definition of happiness is chasing one exhilarating and you know, overwhelmingly powerful day after another, you're probably going to be disappointed. But if you're able to kind of focus more on these low arousal positive emotions like peace and tranquility and satisfaction, those are the kinds of things that tend to endure day to day. They're long lasting, they're stable, and from that kind of base and that foundation, you can also expect to feel those more high arousal positive emotions as well.
I see. Well, we have a question along those lines from Paul in New Jersey. He said, Matt, you said that winning the lottery won't necessarily make you happier. But Paul's question is, I'm pretty poor, and for the most part, exceedingly happy. So he's guessing that being rich would push him right into the extreme happiness zone.
Well, the issue of money and happiness is certainly a very common concern and a legitimate one. What the research tends to show, specifically with lottery winners, is this idea that we've called in our lab hedonic adaptation. And what that basically means is that when some kind of extraordinary, either good or bad event happens, human beings in general have the ability to adapt to them and to basically perceive them in such a way where they're not such a big deal after a while. Absolutely, if you win the lottery, you're going to have a great day, night, in probably a few weeks or a few months. But beyond that, it's probably shocking to a lot of people to what extent that sort of thing becomes kind of background noise and becomes the norm. And that's exactly what research on lottery winners shows. I don't want to pretend like money plays no role in happiness, and generally speaking, what the research shows on happiness is that it is related to money to a point. So basically, practically speaking, if you have enough money where you can pay your bills, you're not going to get evicted from your home, you're able to put food on the table, you have enough money to be happy. Any additional money you have beyond taking care of the necessities has a relatively low impact on your happiness. And certainly the way people typically operate, they wrongfully assume that happiness plays more of a role, I'm sorry, money plays more of a role in happiness than it actually does beyond having just that fixed amount that takes care of the necessities.
I wanted to follow up on something you had said in the previous section, and that is when people hope and they have these expectations, do you find that sometimes they get in their own way by taking that expectation or hope and actually delineating, oh, this is exactly how this is going to happen, and then when the path to that expectation doesn't follow the pattern that they expected, they suddenly people and come way back to the big disappointment. And if that is so, is it better to just trust the outcome, move, you know, put it out there and then move beyond sort of trying to plan it out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people that have too rigid of an expectation, or I think more to the point, feel as if they have to exhibit too much control over their own lives, those are people who are just simply put are less likely to be happy. You know, it doesn't mean that you should be kind of willy-nilly and just, you know, not concerned at all with what you do day to day. You know, it does matter. It does, you know, make a difference to, you know, do things like find a job and, you know, put yourself out there and meet people and things like that. But to have a super rigid idea of this is exactly what I want and this is how it's going to happen, and if it doesn't happen that way, I'm going to be disappointed, you know, that's not going to work. You know, you need to have relative flexibility, and, you know, whether or not you believe in God, you can just trust in the basic idea that the universe is going to bring you what it brings you, you know, and that it's up to you how you're going to respond to that.
That's been an amazing, amazing advice. We really appreciate all of your counsel today. This has been very enlightening for our listeners and for us personally. For all of you out there, you can find out more about positive psychology by going to Matt's website, MatthewDellaPorta.com. Matt, we'd like to thank you again for joining us on Better Worldians Radio today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And join us next week, folks, for our show, Being a Better You Through Meditation, with Dr. Bob Butera, meditation expert and founder of Yoga Life Institute. We have an excellent lineup of guests in the coming weeks, and if you know an unsung Better Worldian who you think would make a great, great guest on our show, you can email us at radio@betterworldians.com. Just a quick reminder here, everyone. You can be part of that miracle this holiday simply by sharing our video challenge and help heal 10 disabled children. It's that easy. Just go to colorwithkindness.com, watch the video, spread it around, share it with your friends, and give these kids the gift of a lifetime. We'd like to thank everyone today for listening. You can join the Better Worldian community at betterworldians.com. And until next time, please, everybody, be a Better Worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at BetterWorldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world.